Here we are, the month of November. We weren't able to make it last month in October. There was a conference that you had to attend to, so we took that month off, so hopefully we can catch up here a little bit. Let's start with the 2018 budget. It's been 2 months since we've talked, so I feel like we're a little behind on this show.
Yeah, sure.
Can you just kind of bring us up to date?
Yeah, back in October, last month, we got the budget approved, so it passed unanimously by the council. Made a few cuts there, you know, towards the end, which typically we do. We advertise a higher budget to ensure that we get the maximum levy, and then we spend a little time over the last couple of weeks of making some cuts to the budget so it aligns with what the council, you know, wants also. And so I was very happy to get that completed and get it behind us and just be able to move forward. So we reduced the overall budget by about $2 million. It'll be balanced, overall balanced budget for the third straight year in 18. And so, you know, we're making progress. Even though we still get some negative headlines periodically about the finances, having an overall balanced budget for three straight years is a really good thing considering what we faced with the loss of revenue.
The big issue was it $7 or $8 million deficit, though, that was still there at the end, by the end of this year.
Right, the general fund only. You know, we've got three funds out of our roughly 82 funds that have a negative balance that we need to deal with, and the general fund is the primary one. So when we approved that 2018 budget, that was one act or one task we had to do. But then now what we're working on in this month's meetings is cleaning up that 1782 notice, that reduction in the 2017 budget that the DLGF put upon us because of our deficit that we carried into this year. So we'll take about $3 million off of that deficit permanently at the end of this year. And then we're extending a loan, so that'll take care of the whole $8 million issue for this year. And then now we've submitted the 2018 budget to the DLGF, and hopefully sometime in late January, early February, we'll find out what they, you know, how they approach that budget. Because we're still going to have a little bit of a deficit, even though it won't show it, you know, because we'll be positive at the end of the year, but we got to pay that loan back next year. And so we're still dealing with about $4.5 to $5 million of deficit. So we've gone from basically nine down to about half of what it was, and we'll get the rest of that knocked out here within the next year, probably year and a half.
You said the budget was reduced by $2 million for next year?
Overall. Yeah, we're planning on spending about $2 million less.
Right, and is that just a little bit here, a little bit there?
Yep, exactly. Nothing
much,
big
yeah.
in any one area. No, just continuing to find, you know, things that we either have finished now and we don't have to budget anymore, or we've just eliminated or reduced spending. And we've done that every year. It's just $2 million is a pretty big change.
So now I know there are many items that you still need to fund. One is the next step for the wastewater utility. Uh-huh. Now, from what I've read, the next step is the $70 million sewer bond, but it doesn't look like it's going to gain approval due to that high cost, but it's an unfunded mandate.
Exactly.
Too, right?
We have to do it. So if the council decides that they want to reduce the amount to approve it, that puts us in a real bind because we are committed to doing these projects. We'll have to deal with that, obviously, but that puts us in a real bad spot. And so, first of all, we need to stay on schedule. We need to keep moving with this. And the next step that we have to do is design work. And so the way this bond was structured, it was in two pieces, $15 million to do the design and other soft costs, and then roughly $60 million to do the projects starting about a year from now. So once the design's done, you put it out to bid and then you start construction. So, you know, the council's balking on the number because it went up. And I didn't like the number going up either. I didn't know it was going to go up so much. We ran into some things with some environmental concerns down there. There's some things that have been added to the project that IDEM is requiring us to put in. There's some things that our staff wanted to put into that. And so from a preliminary upfront number perspective, we knew we weren't going to spend more than that total, and so we're asking for approval to go up to that number, knowing that it'll come in at less. We just don't know how much less. So if the council decides not to approve that or they reduce the number, that's really going to put us in a box. And so that's what we're working on right now as we speak to get something resolved for Thursday night.
And it just seemed like from that article I read from the Tribune Star article, just regarding the council seemed like there was a lack of communication, or they didn't know, you know, what was going on, and all of a sudden they're getting this bill.
They've known for a couple months. That's what it is. So there's, but, and that's something that we don't share all that information with the council. Nobody does. I mean, that's the administration's responsibility. And so their responsibility is to prove the bond. So of course they want to know what's in it. I get that. But some of these things are things that we wouldn't normally tell the council ever. There's probably hundreds of other things out there that we've not informed the council on, because that's not their role. That's not their part of this. And so I think we're working through that now. There's just been some pushback on that. Some of these costs are, the majority of them are totally out of our control. That's just what it costs to do it. And if they don't want to approve that, then it's going to be on them, though, because we will have done everything we can as the administration to stay on schedule with our court order that we have. And so I think we'll come to some compromise and be able to keep advancing this. It's, you know, so we just need to get their questions answered.
Yeah. There's been talk about privatizing this area as well, and I've seen the other cities do that. Is that something kind of...
I think we'll take a look at it. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. I know that there's been a few of those privatizations that have happened in the last few years. It usually takes about 2 years to go through a process like that. It's a very cumbersome and time-consuming and very, you know, deliberative process to on both sides to make sure it's the right thing to do. The Terre Haute Competes group kind of, you know, rolled that out as something they'd like for us to look at. We'd already been looking at it because we've had people approach us. You know, that's the extent of it, is people saying, are you interested in doing this? So we've done some preliminary research, but that's really it to this point.
Now there was a rate, was it a sewer rate increase? Was that last year?
We did two rate increases last year. That one kicked in the first of this year, and then it'll be a smaller one at the first of next year, and then there's no more rate increases that are scheduled at this point in time.
And that money is going toward this sewer.
Yeah, and it'll cover issue. All that. We don't have to raise the rates anymore. Even if we borrow the full $75 million at the cap area, whether it's 70 or 75 or 65 or whatever the number is, we don't have to do any more rate increases. This last small increase provides all the funding we need to do this project. So between property taxes and user fees, that will be covered. So that takes us through phase two. There's still three more phases to go over the next 12 years.
Boy, oh boy. Road tolling popped up back in the news this past week. Uh-huh. New reports saying the state could get billions of dollars by adding toll lanes. You know, not something motorists, of course, want to hear, but does this perk up the ears of city leaders thinking that there was perhaps $1 billion that could go into Indiana roads?
If that's the case, then, you know, and I don't know, I haven't really had an opportunity to look at that data yet. I'm sure it'll come out to all of us at some point. I mean, it's going to be up to the governor to decide how he wants to proceed with that. And so we all sit back here and think about, okay, if you toll I-70, and that's the biggest impact to us, are people going to stay away from the tolls and come and use US 40 and come through Terre Haute and use our roads and put wear and tear on our roads? And so we'll just have to see how this might shake out. And, you know, people that drive, you know, I drive to Indianapolis, especially during session, probably once a week. And, you know, there's a cost to doing that, obviously, for people who are, you know, people who want to go over there for the weekend or go to a ball game or whatever. You know, are they going to use US 40 so they don't have to pay a toll? Those are just kind of the questions a lot of us mayors have specifically. How's this all going to shake out? Is that the right approach? Maybe it's some tolling, or maybe it's not, you know, I don't know how much money they really are trying to generate. So it'll be great to hear the governor's plan. I'm supportive of revenues, but we just got to make sure that it doesn't turn around and cost us more money. You know, the state collects the revenues, the traffic shifts over to the US highway, and then we have to maintain the road. You know, that would be a bad scenario. And I'm not saying that's the only reason why we shouldn't do it. I'm just saying we need to take that into consideration.
I wanted to get your take on this new report just Monday that local officials are planning on pursuing construction of a downtown Terre Haute Convention Center, but without the support of Indiana State. And maybe just a little background, the original had Indiana State and this area, or the city, county leaders in cooperation with the renovation of the Holman Center.
Right.
And ISU officials went through with that renovation, but without the
Yeah, they decided to pursue it on their own. And I don't know if they felt like we were moving too slowly or whatever. There's been a variety of things that have been said out there in the rumor mill that's just not true. We still have our commitment of $25 million on the table, the city, county, and the Convention Tourism Bureau. We believe that we need a convention center downtown. No question about that. All of our studies have shown that. We just don't have any convention space. So they're moving ahead with the Holman Center remodeling, but we still think there is a need for a space for conventions. And so we're going to pursue and see what might be available to us through a public-private partnership, not including ISU. And so they decided to move on without us, and so we still think it's a viable thing to do, and we're going to continue to pursue something. Right now, I can't tell you what that's going to be, but we are doing our due diligence to find out who might partner with us to make this a reality.
Indiana State University down to two finalists for president. Are you looking forward to the next step of the ISU?
There's always going to be change. And so, Dr. Bradley's been there for nearly 10 years. I mean, be 10 years. Change is good sometimes. He's done a great job, growing the university. We've had a lot of great relationship with them for many, many years now. It's just the CIB thing was came out of the blue. And, that's unfortunate, but, with new leadership coming in, there's new opportunities. And so we're going to make sure that we're good partners with ISU from a city perspective. This convention center thing, we'll see where that takes us, but we're going to continue to work with them and do what's best for the entire community. And so, I'm never going to give up on that.
Yeah. One quick follow-up question, if I can go back to the, mm-hmm. Is the Holman Center, is convention center type, is that dead now?
Well, no, the Holman Center is, they're doing their remodeling
right.
of that facility.
Right.
Then we're looking at a separate facility that would be a convention space.
But not in cooperation with the Holman Center.
Well, it doesn't look like
it
that at this point because
right.
ISU wanted it to be on the backside, and we just totally do not support that. We wanted it to be on the front if it was going to be co-located and, connected to that building. So I think there's some other opportunities to do that would still put it in the same general vicinity. But we'll just have to see. Once again, it depends on what kind of public-private partnership we can put together here to make it reality.
Yeah, and that's what we see in other cities.
Exactly.
Wilmington, Kokomo,
yeah,
partnering up with
Evansville too.
I went
to that conference
yeah.
last month and saw, their convention center is right across the street from the arena. And so there's ways to do this that still accomplishes the goal.
So I see last Friday, I'm not sure if you were there, but there was a proclamation regarding I don't know if I'm saying this right, Chaim Weizmann?
Uh-huh. I was not there. I was
okay.
at Washington, D.C. last week.
Okay. Yeah. But it was the first president of the State of Israel and installation of a historical marker there.
Uh-huh.
And there's quite a history lesson there. Eva Kor, of course, from the Candles Holocaust Museum, hopes that it symbolizes learning and understanding. And I've never asked you in all these times about Eva Kor, what an icon here in Terre Haute.
Absolutely. I had a chance to go to her and visit Auschwitz many years ago. She's just, what's different about her is her forgiveness. And, most people that have been through the Holocaust are just not, that's a tough thing for them to do because they went through so much. It was such a horrible thing. And Eva did too, and so did her twin sister. But Eva's decided to just, really go on a forgiveness tour in her, later years here. We've got a great museum in our community that tells the story. And then she's just going out trying to get people to say, we got to move on. Don't want to forget it. We can't let it ever happen again. But we also have to forgive those that have done some horrible, horrible things to people. And so that's why she has a very unique message. And just a great lady that really works hard every day. And, she wants the chance to be in front of Congress one of these days to tell the story about we all need to get along kind of a thing. We need to kind of get over some of the things of the past. And I think that's a great message for all of us just to stop and reflect because it is hard to forgive people, when bad things happen and life is too short. And so more power to her to keep getting that message out there, remind people and teach our youth about the Holocaust so we can all make sure that never happens again.
Before we wrap up, any last-minute updates, construction projects, new projects going on?
Well, no, nothing new, really. Margaret Avenue's still on schedule, so our overpass is planned to open next October. That's a big deal. And, we're still working on, as I said, the convention center space. That'll be something you're going to hear more about in the coming months if we can pull something together. And so, we're still doing some last-minute paving and doing some things like that as the the construction season comes to a close, and just glad to have the budget behind us. We'll soon have our 2017 budget issue resolved and just really kind of finishing the year on a strong note. So, no, just looking forward to the holidays.